Joseph Campbell is one of my favorite cultural writers, and the sort of the history of religious culture too. You know, his work, The Power of Myth. PBS, I think, did a series on it. It's a wonderful series too. The thing about Joseph Campbell that's relevant to me today is that what we have in this reading from Luke's Gospel contains a story, a setting, and a story that does not have any connections anywhere else in Luke. This story of the rich man and Lazarus is its own little insert. And there is no description of life after death in Luke's gospel that goes with it. The story sounded a lot like a straight-up description of heaven and hell, didn't it? That the rich man went to hell, and Lazarus went to heaven, and Lazarus was with Abraham, and the rich man was down there, and it was hot, and it was burning, and he was thirsty. Well, it sounds like Dante had a hand in writing this, doesn't it? But that description of life after death is not something that was present in the first century Jewish teaching. That's not the way they understood life after death. And that was not the way that Jesus had talked about it at any other point, and he doesn't anywhere else in Luke's gospel. So that most scholars look at this section and they kind of go, where did this come from, and why is he doing this? This is just this oddest little thing. Okay. What else are you going to do? And so there's this, it just sits there. It's kind of like a fossil. I remember visiting a bank in Charlotte, North Carolina. It was the Race Headquarters, the Bank of America sponsor. Back then it was Nations Bank. They'd sponsored a foot race in downtown Charlotte. And so that's where the registration was, in this bank lobby. I mean, it was pretty elaborate and beautiful. But the walls in this bank were made out of slabs of marble. And if you got up close to them, though, you could see little places where there were fossils embedded in the marble. And they were so sort of out of place. I mean, here was this grand, you know, facility and facade, too. But the fossils were just like, wow, right there. And there was, you know, just little bits and pieces all over. And there's something about this section in Luke's gospel that has that. And where did it come from? It's not a part of this larger picture. Most of the commentaries I read say that Jesus grabbed it. Sort of, it was commonplace. Remember, this is Luke's gospel. Luke is also the one who writes the Acts of the Apostles. And one of the moments in the Acts of the Apostles that really sets the stage for the rest of what Luke writes is that moment of Pentecost. Remember? And what is it that makes Pentecost work, except that there's people from all over the world in Jerusalem? So it's okay. Don't feel bad that there are these other ways of seeing things and stories out there that would have been available for Jesus to reach over and grab and use as an illustration. I don't think he's trying to teach us about heaven and hell. I don't think that's what's here. He's using that story to talk about something else, which is much more like what Jesus does. And so we need to get to that something else. And I think one of the places that we can get to that something else is to look at what he says before and after. And we've been there already. We know that since he has turned his face toward Jerusalem, okay, Father Dan, you can stop saying that now. That's like six Sundays in a row, okay? It's actually more if you count. Okay? That he's turned his face toward Jerusalem. His purpose is before him. He is intent on it. And he knows, as he has said to the disciples, in that same moment when he turned his face toward Jerusalem, I've got to go do this thing. And it includes being put before my accusers. It includes being crucified. It includes being raised from the dead. And remember how Peter reacted to the news. Remember back then? Peter said, oh, no, no, no. We're not going to let that kind of stuff happen to you. And Jesus had to say to Peter, get thee behind me, Satan. No, I've got to go. And remember, too, the Samaritans. did not welcome Jesus because his face was turned toward Jerusalem. They're like, you don't want to be here. We don't have any place for you to stay. Go on. Go on. You're headed that way. Just keep going. Keep going, Jesus. So his focus is that intent. And intense. I mean, he's really holding on to this tightly, and he must, because all of these little hurdles that he has to jump, all of these little questions and challenges, all these moments that the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the temple elders, all these questions that keep being put before him, he's got to answer them, but he's got to do more than answer them. Sometimes he has to correct the question and say, you really ought to be asking this, and you really ought to be thinking about this. And also remember this, that so much, and we're learning this as we go, so much of Luke's gospel is an expansion of the Magnificat. Remember the great reversal of fortune, that the mighty will be brought down and the lowly will be lifted up, that Mary sings about. And that has an economic consequence to it. And we've already had several stories where he talks about how household economies work and how they better are organized for the sake of the kingdom as it is coming. And there's all sorts of ways that Jesus has been talking that way. The other piece, and I think this is where we need to focus, is less on this funny little story with Lazarus and the rich man, and more on who Jesus is portraying himself as, because this is the other part of it. What God wants for us is a world that does not have a great chasm in it. You heard that line. Sorry, rich man, you can't come here. And sorry, Lazarus can't go to you. Because a great chasm has been fixed between us. And those over there can't come over here. And those over here can't go over here. And what Jesus is here to do, go into the chasm and come back out and change things. I mean, his death is that. I mean, if you want to stay close to Christian teaching, especially as it continues after the death and resurrection, after Pentecost, if you want to stay close to it, that's what they start to understand, is that Jesus' death is not just the old Jewish version of death, of just sort of going to this dry, airless place, dark, airless place, but going into hell. And so I think that's why he borrows this story. It's because he's talking about the work he will be doing during those 3 days. He's looking that far ahead. He knows that's what's going to happen. He's intent on helping it to happen. And so what he's saying is the world left to its own devices. Paul wrote about it when he said to Timothy, you know, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. The world left to its own devices will fix a chasm between the rich and the poor, the haves and the have-nots, the goods and the bads. It'll do that. We've seen it. It's going on right now in our world, too. But that what Jesus is here to do is not just to remove the chasm, to go into it, to fix things, to come out and to give the whole world a different economy, a different way of understanding good and bad, right and wrong, a different way to understand wealth, and especially common wealth. And that's what Jesus is about in this story, I think. That's what he's been about in Luke's gospel all along. Why change now? Except that this is another one of those challenges. Now, I think it matters to us today because we have slipped, just like Paul was writing to Timothy. We've forgotten and we've slipped back into those bad habits. And we've done things like confuse our well-being in this world with God's blessing of us, as if somehow that can measure up to our well-being once God raises us from the dead. Can I say the name Joel Osteen? Can I say any of those televangelists? Okay, there's probably an Episcopal priest or two that preaches that way too. I'm afraid I probably have. But we need to be careful that we leave God room to do what God wants to do and not limit his reward to somehow this realm. Yeah, good things happen. And sometimes good things happen to good people. Sometimes bad things happen to good people too, don't they? But what God is doing for us is not just making us rich here. Because we'll mess that up. And we just did, again and again and again. What God is doing for us is bigger than that. And it addresses not only our own needs and our own problems and our own concerns, but it addresses it in such a way that it wipes out any of those ways that we might hinder God's work in the long run. It gets rid of the chasm. And everybody's on the same terms with God once Jesus is raised from the dead. Everybody's on the same terms with God. Everybody. Now, again, we don't handle that information well, do we? I get requests like this all the time. Father Dan, could you say a prayer? We need money. And I do say those prayers, but I need to remind those people that I'm in sales, not managed. But I don't sell fire insurance. You hear me? I don't sell fire insurance. Neither did Jesus. Because what he was doing was making something available to everybody. Okay? Can I say it? Universal health care. I mean, it was that kind of thing. It was much broader than just what you could afford or what you saw to for your own well-being or how you provided for your children. It's bigger than that. God's gift to us changes the economy, removes the chasm, and makes it so that we are all eligible for that blessing that is to be raised from the dead. That's what God can do. And if we live our lives in this divided way, rich and poor, right and wrong, if we keep building chasms, we're going to hurt the potential for God's blessing to come to everybody when it needs to come. We're going to get in the way of it. But God's got something big in mind. Bigger than anybody in this room having all the money they could ever dream to have. Something bigger than that. God's got something big in mind. Bigger than the church having all of its bills paid. Any of us having all of our bills paid. God's got something big in mind. And with Jesus, he's doing it. And so, if you hear a frustration in Jesus' tone of voice, if you hear this story as him saying, y'all, which I think is in there, it's because, y'all, come on. All right, here we go. There's a rich man and there's a poor man. How many times do I have to keep telling you that God is up to something bigger than this? Stop asking questions about who's married to whom in heaven. It's bigger than that. Stop asking questions about how many barns you can build before it's too many. It's bigger than that. And so we've got to open ourselves up to that possibility, that what God is about is bigger than anything we can imagine, all of our wealth combined. I think there's good news in that. Now, it may first hit you as a challenge. God's up to something bigger. Whoa, okay. Okay, God, I don't know if I can do all that. But if he weren't, one of us would get left out, at least, if not 10 of us, if not half of us. If God weren't up to something bigger than what we can imagine, somebody's going to get left out. And somebody's going to end up on the wrong side of a chasm that we built. So thanks be to God, he's up to something bigger. Thanks be to God that what he is doing, he is doing in the person of Jesus and is continuing to do because he raised him from the dead and gives us that promise too. What we have to do is to follow Jesus' role model, at least, if not have our own sense that there's something in it for us even on the bad days when we have a hard time following. We've got to start letting go of some of our riches, some of our possessions, some of those things that we don't really need. And y'all, this is not go into your closet and keep the clothes that bring you joy. Okay, it's bigger than that, too. All right? It's bigger than that. And God has called us to be part of something bigger than what we can imagine. What a gift to have a God who wants us in on it that way and wants it to be that wonderful a thing. I gotta tell you, I don't feel like I deserve that kind of gift. I just don't. I worry about my finances. I mean, I've got a daughter in college still. She's 24, you all. I mean, don't we all have issues like that? But what a gift that God would take care of us in such a way that everybody that we would leave behind gets brought along. And that we get to go to. I'm going to print up a bumper sticker. And it's going to say, "No more chasms."